Two very interesting Rashis in Parshas Kedoshim, which have to be cross-referenced with earlier Rashis al Hatara in order to fully distill or appreciate their meaning. The first Rashi in Parshas Kedoshim senses the very strange opening psukim of Parshas Kedoshim. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemar is the standard generic introduction. And then there's not just a repetition, but also an expansion. Daber, which is a repetition, El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael V'amarta Lehem. So first of all, there's the repetition factor. Twice the Torah inserts unnecessary verbs, different verbs, Daber V'amarta. Very similar to the dual language in the beginning of Emor, the parsha after Kedoshim, Emor Al-Aron HaKohen B'nei Yisrael V'amarta Lehem. Here the double verb of conveying or transmitting, but not the repetition of the word Amira, but the switch from Daber to Amira. But Rashi chooses or selects to comment on not the redundancy, but the expansion. Daber al kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Isn't that implied in the term lemor? Daber al kol adas b'Yisrael. So, of course, Chazal sense this as well, and Rashi quotes the Medrash, the Taras Kohanim. Melami chenemra parsha zu behakel, v'pnei sherov gufei tara tluyinba. Very intriguing Rashi. And there really are two parts to Rashi. First of all, just identifying what he's referring to. And then second of all, the why. Why is this a unique parsha that has to be transmitted in the presence of Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael? So Rashi, of course, employs the very, very unique word of Hakel. It's unlikely that Rashi intends this literally, that this parsha was read in Hakel uniquely. Hakel, typically the mitzvah at the end of the Shemitah cycle, the Sukkos immediately subsequent to the Shemitah cycle, the Melech, as the Rambam records, reads Mishneh Torah, not Parshas Kedoshim. So it's unlikely that Rashi means specifically Hakel. What he probably intends is in a Hakel-like setting, and part of what made Hakel unique is the insistence that not only should women attend, but men and children, I'm sorry, not only men, but women and children, in order to create a communal feel, a national experience. The Gemara in Chagiga talks about this in a much more diminished fashion in order to allow schar for those who facilitate the arrival of those who may not even be chayiv to come. Women and children aren't chayiv in Talmud Torah per se, but obviously the larger focus is that Hakel is not just cerebral and study-based, but it's experiential and national and requires the presence of an entire people. So Rashi probably means that Kedoshim invited or was pivoted on that same type of national and collective experience, and I'll get back to this a bit later. Now, what's interesting is to compare and contrast this Rashi with a Rashi in the end of Kitisa. Rashi in the end of Kitisa quotes the Gemara in Erevin, and the Gemara describes the process by which the Torah was conveyed to the entire people, to the entire nation. The Gemara says, Moshe studied from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he taught it to Aaron. Aaron, having studied the Torah from Moshe, then went to Moshe's left, sat down, and then his children came in. Moshe taught them the Torah, and then they sat down, or at least Elazar sat on Moshe's right, and Itamar sat on Moshe's left. Nadav and Avihu presumably had already passed, had already been killed. And then the Skenim came in and were taught, and then when they moved, and then when they withdrew, then the Torah was taught to the entire people. So it appears as if all of Torah was delivered to the entire people through several different rounds. And yet Rashi talks about, and the Torah emphasizes, Dabel Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. So in terms of resolving this apparent contradiction, two options, and those two options can complement each other, emerge. One is that the description of the general methodology of teaching, which Rashi cites from the Gemara in Erevin in the end of Kitisa, and applies to most of the Torah, it doesn't require the presence of every human, of every Jew. It just invites them and organizes and orchestrates a orderly procession of who comes when, first Aaron, then his children, then the Skenim. Whereas Kedoshim demanded the presence of everyone. Alternatively, even if in Kedoshim everyone attended, they didn't all attend together. There were shifts. Whereas Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael in Parshas Kedoshim suggests common presence, simultaneous presence. So at the factual level, Rashi and the Psukim in Parshas Kedoshim, the phrase, emphasize the collective nature of transmitting Parshas Kedoshim in a way that the rest of the Torah, though it may have been offered comprehensively, didn't contain that same communal, simultaneous, experiential component. The second question in Rashi is why? And Rashi, for some reason, describes the importance of the mitzvahs, perhaps the sweep of the mitzvahs as well. Rashi's language is the reason that Parshas Kedoshim demanded a communal setting and a communal audience is because Rov Gufei Torah Tluyin Ba, because Kedoshim is so saturated with mitzvahs. And indeed, aside from Parshas Ki Teitzeh, it probably contains, I have to do a count on this, but it contains 283 to 330, 325. So it contains 37 mitzvahs. Of course, Ki Teitzeh has many more mitzvahs, but it's certainly very dense with mitzvahs. And according to Rashi, it therefore warrants collective presence in order to stress their importance, in order to avoid confusion. It's possible that the reason that Kedoshim was stated in the collective setting is not only because of the sweep and the importance of the mitzvahs contained in this parsha, but because the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim emphasizes the pyramid of personal and communal ethics, whose apogee is V'yavta L'Recha Kamocha. If you read the section carefully, you'll see the comprehensive list of Bein Adam L'Chavero, beginning with tzedakah, the prohibition of lying and denying salaries, false oaths, business, immoral activities and behavior in business, exploitation, manipulation of those who can't defend themselves, described by Cheresh and Iver, or Lefnei Iver L'Titei Michshol, judicial corruption, latasu avol b'mishpat, social corrosion, lashon hara motzi shemra, interpersonal hatred, latisa sechicha bilvavecha, revenge, bearing of grudges, and of course the apogee is v'yavta l'recha kamocha. There isn't the same sequence list, delineated mitzvos, latasa as it says in the entire Torah. And as I said before, the climax is v'yavta l'recha kamocha, which serves as the both the purpose of all these mitzvahs as well as the conduit. If you succeed in V'yavta L'Recha Kamocha, you'll obviously be able to practice moral business ethics and personal morality and sensitivity and in personal interactions, as of course Hillel told that ger. And that setting may have required a communal ambience or communal atmosphere for two reasons. First of all, because one of the motives for morality, though by no means the only, even the most primary motives, is to create a firm, stable, healthy, and fit society. Every society is only as strong and robust as the ethical pulse and energy which allows and inspires people to act outside of the box. Government and law can't fully ensure social well-being and social harmony. People have to volunteer, act outside of the box, display morality, sensitivity, charity, generosity. So establishing or delivering these mitzvahs in a communal setting emphasizes, enunciates one of the reasons for morality, one of the reasons for ethics, so that a society can be built in a stable, firm, and sensitive fashion. Additionally, not just a society or not just a community, but in particular the Jewish community. I've spoken about this in the past in Rav Lichtenstein's famous Seicha, that the experience in Mitzrayim was a Korah Barzel, was not just punitive, but it was formative, and it crafted national consciousness, which was based on the commitment to create a people and a nation which believed in social justice, ethics, morality, personal sensitivity. So it wasn't just that the communal setting was demanded kol adas Yisrael so that they could appreciate the communal benefits of social need and social impetus for kindness and charity, But they should realize Kol Hadas Yisrael, their special historical calling, having been persecuted, having been exploited, having been taken advantage of in Mitzrayim, that now their mission was to create Hadas Yisrael, a firm society based on V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha and its derivatives and its subsidiary mitzvos described in the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. A second interesting Rashi occurs a little bit later in the Parsha when the Torah describes the Isser of Arla. Now, the Isser itself refers to the first 3 years of produce of a tree, in Eretz Yisrael, of course, primarily. And it's a strange word. It's not unfamiliar to us, but its application with forbidden fruit, with fruit that's unripened, is a bit odd. The idea, of course, has been so deeply entrenched in our imagination that we just associate it seamlessly and effortlessly. But Arla refers to a covered male organ, perhaps a covered heart, or perhaps a covered tongue. Moshe had an aral svatayim, people with a speech defect, as if there's something covering their tongue, denying it free movement. The baby's organ is covered with foreskin. Other forms of Rashi in Parshas Va'era, when Moshe questions his ability to succeed because he's aral svatayim, so Rashi quotes several psukim, quotes a pasuk in Chavakuk about an arel and an atum, who Rashi quotes the pasuk in Yechezkel about people whose hearts are blocked or obstructed, but the fruit isn't blocked or obstructed, the fruit is just forbidden. So why should the first 3 years of produce be referred to as arla? What does this Isser have in common with the other applications of the word Arla throughout the Torah? So Rashi, both here in Parshas Kedoshim and in this parallel Rashi in Va'era, Shmos Paragvav Pasuk Yud Beis, writes that you should be blocked off from receiving benefit from these fruits. Va'atantem atimaso yehi atum v'nistam milenos mimeno. Similarly, Rashi in Va'era, when he describes Arla's peros, asulo otem v'kiso, make a blockage or an impediment. Isser sheyavdil b'fnei achilasa, an isser that should block and impede your eating these fruits. So interestingly enough, the Torah described this isser through the imagery and through the syntax of a blockage, and Rashi identifies that blockage as an obstruction between a human being and these fruits. So first of all, at a technical level, there's nothing patently wrong with these fruits, as opposed to Maholas Asuros, as opposed to Isurim, which remain intact, which cannot be absolved. These fruits are no different than the fourth or the fifth year, which are, under different conditions, permitted to eat. They're just fruits. They're just apples. There's nothing, not that there's anything nefarious or evil with chazir or other non-kosher food, but those are items which are at least entrenched in our imagination as forbidden, as inherently usser, as inherently prohibited. Whereas these are fruits that just have to be waited out. We just have to be patient. And within that statement is, of course, a moral and a religious statement that sometimes perfection in life can only be achieved through patience and forbearance and waiting. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to see the first 3 years fruit as any different, necessarily. Biologically, they're different, and not biologically, but naturally, they're different. And therefore, we have to wait till that fourth year when the fruit will morph into something qualitatively different. Hashem just wants us to be blocked, to be impeded, to be barred from eating those fruits. We have to establish a separation. But on a second level, there's a statement here, not just about Arla, but a statement about Oli Surim. Very famous Eben Ezra about a different Isser. Torah writes, Lo tachmon eseshes riecha. You shouldn't covet your friend's wife. And the famous question, how could the Torah legislate against emotions? The Torah can legislate against actions. How could the Torah legislate against emotions? So obviously, at a technical level, a person who has that emotions may not be healthy, may not be morally restorative, but it's certainly not us unless there's some attempt to act upon that emotion. But the simple reading of the Pasuk does suggest that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to ban the emotion. So the Eben Ezra employs a very famous parable about a pauper who doesn't covet a princess because he knows it's unrealistic, and the fact that something has been rendered as usser to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu should create that divide, that item is so unrealistic to us because it's so unspeakable, so unmentionable, or unimaginable, that we'd lose our desire for it in the same way that economic disparities would blunt desire and would blunt covetousness. So that statement is emerging in this language, that when something's usher for you, you shouldn't just avoid it, but it should appear to you as blocked, it should appear to you as removed, as arla, as atom, as distant, as separated, as barred from you, as havdalah. And it's, again, it's not just a statement about fruit, it's a statement about any iser that a person, and then chumrah is one of the apparatuses to create that distance and that division, but not only, and obviously it's attitudinal, not just the implementation of a chumrah. So Rashi is sensitive to the fact that the Torah uses a very strange word and a very peculiar associated imagery to describe the Isra of Allah. In Arla, in part, it has specific relevance to Arla. In part, it describes attitudes towards Isra in general. Shabbat Shalom.